You're listening to Boston Public Radio. I'm Callie Crossley. Last year, police departments across the U.S. linked up with companies like Verizon and T-Mobile to pull the cell phone records of over a million Americans. They harvested a bundle of data like texts, emails, location information, personal contacts, and phone call history, all in the name of solving crimes. Now, here's the catch. All that data was handed over without a warrant and without the approval of a judge. A new bill by Massachusetts Congressman Ed Markey would rein in this practice. The Wireless Surveillance Act of 2012 says police need probable cause to find out who you've called and where you've been spending your time. Here with us today to talk about this is Cade Crockford, Project Manager and Principal Investigator of the Technology for Liberty Project at the ACLU of Massachusetts. And by the way, we reached out to Congressman Ed Markey, as well as to law enforcement officials and major cell phone service providers, but no one was available to join us today. So, Cade, you are very excited about this bill. You've called it the Bill of Rights for the Digital Age. Why?
That's right. We desperately need clear, as Congressman Markey says, clear, consistent rules to govern electronic surveillance in the 21st century. We do not have them. There is currently a patchwork of law around the country governed by different circuit court decisions. We just had a very bad circuit court decision in the Sixth Circuit come down last week, essentially saying that the police can track your mobile phone without a warrant. That is to say, track your real-time location without a warrant. But the law is not at all clear. And so what that has, the effect of that is that consumers and American citizens and persons in this country who have cell phones, which is almost all of us at this point, we don't have a guarantee to privacy through our cell phones. And on top of that, the cell phone companies are faced with this very complicated patchwork of laws. So in terms of the cost associated with this surveillance, it's not simply that we are losing on the privacy end and in terms of our constitutional rights, to not be spied on by the government without a warrant, essentially. It's also a tax in a way, because we're paying the cell phone companies. And part of our bill to those cell phone companies goes to paying for these giant government operations offices that companies like AT&T and Verizon operate. And they have to spend a lot of money on lawyers to govern the responses to these government requests.
So we're paying to be spied on.
That's correct. And since the law isn't uniform nationwide, since it's a patchwork and it's very confusing for these companies, they have to spend a lot of money ensuring that they're obeying the law, because the law is not the same in Michigan as it is in Massachusetts.
Now let's talk about how widespread this is, because now we know, and this is a piece of legislation that came, or a piece of information that came out in July, which prompted, actually, Ed Markey to move forward with this legislation. 1.3 million requests for personal data.
That's right. And that actually just scratches the surface, Kelly, because one of the issues that Ed Markey's legislation deals with, which is fabulous, is the notion of these cell phone tower dumps. And what that means is that law enforcement are sending one request to AT&T to say, please give us all of the cell phone information for every single person who's within range of this one cell phone tower. Maybe because there was a crime within the range of the cell phone tower and they want to know, were there any people who have outstanding warrants or who've been locked up a bunch of times who are already on their radar? Were any of those people within within range of this cell phone tower during the commission of that crime? So they'll submit one subpoena. Again, this is not, no judge has ever seen this. They'll submit one subpoena to AT&T, and perhaps in response to that one subpoena in a place like Boston or New York, where there are, potentially tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of people in that zone, they're getting the personal information of not simply one person, but potentially tens or hundreds of thousands of people. So that 1.3 million number is potentially very low in terms of how many people were actually affected by this surveillance.
And exactly what can they access? So in my mind, I'm thinking you can see in my cell phone history who I called, who called me. You can't see what we talked about, I assume. But I'm thinking now that with texting being as popular as it is, I mean, there's a whole history of everything that's going on right there, right laid out there for you in the texting.
That's right. Mm. And so all of this actually started because a couple years ago, the ACLU coordinated a massive public records request project. So in many states, over 30 states in the country, ACLU affiliates requested information from police to find out how police were using subpoenas to get information about our cell phones. And we found some pretty disturbing stuff. And that is what prompted Congressman Ed Markey to send these letters to the cell phone companies to inquire from them about how frequently they were getting requests from police and what kinds of requests they were getting. And that was what, you know, the information that he received from those cell phone companies is what caused the press storm and, you know, a lot of people being legitimately concerned and ultimately led to him drafting this legislation. So, you know, police can get a number of different kinds of very revealing private information about us from cell phone companies without a warrant. They can get our cell phone, you know, every single person that we've ever called in the range of time that they're looking at. They can get when we called those people. And perhaps most revealingly, they can get our location information at different times, sometimes even in real time. So, you know, the police could potentially file a subpoena to AT&T right now and find out that I'm sitting here having an interview with you. Mm. And your question about text messages is actually very complicated because when we submitted these public records requests nationwide, what we found is that in some places, police are, in fact, receiving the content of text messages. Mm. So that's not simply Callie texted Cade. That's Callie sent Cade a message saying, I'll see you in a half hour. Bring me a coffee or whatever, right? Which in our view, is completely unacceptable because the content of communications should absolutely be protected by the Fourth Amendment. There's some debate over whether or not, you know, the numbers that I call should be protected under the Fourth Amendment as a private search or whatever that the police would need a warrant to get. But there's no question that content should require a warrant. And in some cases, that's not happening.
I am speaking with Cade Crockford. She's a project manager and principal investigator of the Technology for Liberty Project at the ACLU of Massachusetts. And we're talking about Congressman Ed Markey's bill, the Wireless Surveillance Bill, which would put limits on how law enforcement officials and some corporations can comb through your cell phone data. It would put limits on whether or not they're able to do so without a warrant, as they are able to do at this moment, which is a little shocking. Now, a couple of things I think should be factored into this conversation. Law enforcement officials say, right, it's supposed to be used for emergency right now, if we're all on the same page and what we thought was happening. Emergency use, okay. So they can cite, you know, case after case, for example, of some victim crouched in a basement somewhere, having been assaulted to near death. They're able to trace those cell phone signals to that person by using this technology. Nobody would disagree that that's a good use of this, of the technology. And we should note that in 2008, the Bush administration had asked before that the phone companies be given immunity against lawsuits under him. He had asked that the government broaden eavesdropping powers in 2008, but then he wanted to make sure that the phone companies were not held accountable if somebody came to them and requested this information. So those two things should be thinking about while we're discussing what this bill may do and may not do. So let's talk about what parts of the bill or what all parts of the bill that Congressman Markey has suggested that you're particularly happy about to see in this bill.
So again, the piece that limits the way that law enforcement can request tower dump information, again, that's all the information coming in or out of one cell phone tower. That's incredibly important. Another piece that's really important would simply be that the police are required to disclose how many times they request this information and for what purposes every year, and that would be public information. So in other words, the information that Ed Markey received from the cell phone companies and published and was the subject of a front page New York Times story a couple months ago, that would become routine, that we would always know in the future every year how many times, you know, law enforcement was requesting this information. So a basic transparency mechanism. Another hugely important piece of the legislation would address precisely what you just talked about, these emergency requests. And that would simply require that there's some level of accountability, that police would be required to sign a sworn statement, you know, to the effect that they could get in trouble, actually, be held in contempt if they lied about, you know, the existence of a bloodied and bruised person in the basement. And in fact, they were really using the technology to try to track their ex-girlfriend. There would be some sort of accountability. Right now, there isn't. So those are hugely important pieces. Another one would require that the FCC draft regulations to limit, to force cell phone companies to disclose and limit the amount of time in which they keep our data. So as it stands now, there's no law or rule that says to AT&T, you have to delete someone's location information after a week or a month or 180 days. Nothing. So these companies are keeping it for as long as they want to. And there are different, you know, there were some stories last year about how companies have actually very different standards. Some companies hold certain kinds of information for a long time. Some hold others for hardly any time at all. But this would impose some requirements and some standards on that. And then the final and most important piece that this legislation would do is that it would require a judge's approval to track someone's location. This is incredibly important. Just recently, we witnessed a wonderful decision in the Supreme Court in the Jones case, where the Supreme Court held that, yes, the government needs to get a warrant in order to track your real-time physical location with a GPS device over a long period of time.
They had been tracking a guy through GPS.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And they put a GPS unit on his car, and they followed him for a long time. And the court said, no, you need to get a warrant to do that. You have to have an active warrant, because that's an invasion of someone's privacy that is serious enough that it warrants a Fourth Amendment protection. And we completely agree, and we think that that should seamlessly be applied to the world of location tracking via cell phones. In fact, cell phone location tracking is potentially much more dangerous and pervasive, because whereas with a GPS tracking device that a law enforcement officer has to go out and physically put on your car, GPS location information tracking devices are embedded into our cell phones, most of us. So the police hardly have to do any work, really, to track us through our cell phones. And part of the reason that that's important is that one of the mechanisms that's sort of built in to protecting us from inappropriate government surveillance is the amount of energy it would take for law enforcement to follow us around all the time. Mm. And since this would take hardly any energy, as Ed Markey's numbers reveal, it's widespread and potentially very abusive.
So if you don't have, just as a technical thing, and I'm not certain that either of us maybe have the technical knowledge to know this, but this is something to, you know, put out there. If you don't have that little thing on your phone that says allow tracking or allow location services, can they still track you?
Yes, because there are a number of ways that you can track someone through their mobile phone. One is through the GPS device built into the phone. And, you know, if you have the piece on your iPhone turned off that says no location tracking, there's another way that your phone can be tracked, which is that, you know, your phone communicates with a cell phone tower. In fact, it communicates with multiple cell phone towers all the time to triangulate your location, basically. It also communicates with Wi-Fi hotspots. And so using all of this other information, law enforcement is able to determine, not as precise a location, but a relatively precise location within a couple hundred feet. So it's not as precise as GPS, but in fact, yes, they can do it.
They can find you. Now, you have set this issue, or perhaps a potential solution to this issue, in the context of how much data that government can have access to anyway, vis-a-vis the Patriots Bill. We know that, for example, under the Patriots Bill, if you go to the library, check something out, and the FBI decides to come in and see what you checked out, the librarian is required not to tell you that that happened. Mm-hmm. So it's same thing going on here to some degree. So how, as a piece of this whole potential government surveillance, government gathering of data, where do you put this cell phone data snooping down in the context?
That's a really important question, because this is just one of many ways in which the government is gathering all sorts of very private information about many people, millions, in some cases hundreds of millions of people in this country, all without judicial authority, all without any kind of warrants. And you know, it's crucially important that we begin to think about digital privacy in a much more all-encompassing way. So while we fully support the Wireless Surveillance Act of 2012, and we hope that, you know, people listening will contact their representatives to support the bill as well, and we also fully support Ed Markey's companion bill, which deals with drone privacy and transparency. These are but two technologies in a growing and rapidly expanding world of 21st century technological digital surveillance. And we really need, in order to address these problems, we need an update to Electronic Privacy Communications Law, which was last passed in 1986. I was 3 years old. Hmm. People hardly had cell phones. The internet practically didn't exist. The way we communicate is just radically different from how we did in 1986. So we need to update ECPA, and we also probably need a new Privacy Act. The Privacy Act was passed in 1974, again, before I was born, well before the internet even existed. So in order, you know, because part of the problem is that we can address cell phone technology today, and we should. We should pass Congressman Markey's bill. But there's going to be a new technology tomorrow that we haven't thought about yet and that the Constitution doesn't explicitly address. And the problem that we're encountering is that presidents from Barack Obama to George Bush are looking for, you know, legal arguments that allow them to exploit these tools at the expense of our privacy. So we really need a Bill of Rights digital revolution in the United States.
And does this bill have a chance of getting broad-based support? I mean, cell phone data, as you've pointed, everybody's got a cell phone, even in the Congress, so...
That's right. You know, I am not a fortune teller, and I can't be sure of that, but I sure hope so.
All right. Thank you so much, Cade Crockford. We've been talking about wireless surveillance with Cade Crockford. Cade is the project manager and principal investigator of the Technology for Liberty Project at the ACLU of Massachusetts. You can see a full summary of Congressman Ed Markey's Wireless Surveillance Act at our website, wgbhnews.org. Kara Miller, back here in Studio 3.
Hey, Callie. So today I'm going to talk to innovator Harry West. And he's somebody who seems to have sort of perceived sociological shifts before the rest of us do.
What do you mean? Is he a soothsayer?
Well, so for example, he noticed that families were vacationing differently. So he reworked Holiday Inn. Instead of branding it as a destination for the nuclear family, he made Holiday Inn a more convenient place for the traveling professional. And that's sort of one example of how he thinks of products and brands to accommodate our changing lifestyles.
Well, I'll be interested to hear that.
Sounds good. I'm Kara Miller.
I'm Callie Crossley, and this is Boston Public Radio.